Right now, it is time for our good friends from the BerkshireEdge.com, covering Berkshire County, especially Southern Berkshire County in our area, with news coverage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at the BerkshireEdge.com. And we always like to welcome them here on a Wednesday morning. It's David and Marcy. Good morning.
Good morning.
We missed you last week, so we're here.
Well, there's things you got to do in life, right?
Yeah, so we went to New York for Thanksgiving.
Well, that's not a bad thing to do.
No, we had a nice time.
I cooked for Thanksgiving.
Pardon?
I cooked for Thanksgiving.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, how was that?
Hey, well, it always comes out good, but by the time you finish cooking for Thanksgiving, you don't feel
You're
like
exhausted.
you just don't feel like eating the turkey.
But, I know, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's just and you taste as you go along because you're adding spices and stuff like that. So you take a little taste as you go along, and by the time you're finished,
you've had a meal.
You've had your meal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's go and see what we'll find at the BerkshireEdge.com this week, and back to the top of the list. It bubbles the dispute over the foundry in West Stockbridge.
Oh, this is ongoing. I mean, this is, you know, this we've talked about this before, but this is a very upsetting story because it's a big fight in the little town of West Stockbridge, which has really been, developing very nicely over the last decade. It was a very sleepy little town, and then a coffee shop called Number 6 Depot opened
right.
up, and it became a magnet for people coming for coffee, and they used to have art shows, and then the town began to develop, and then they had this wonderful new place called can't think of it so early.
I'm not
but
sure.
It's Turn Park Art Space, started by two young Russians. It's a sculpture garden, and it's really magical. So the town of West Stockbridge is really developing very nicely, and now they're pitted against, people are pitted against each other in a terrible fight. I think we've mentioned this before. There is a performance space called the Foundry, which has outdoor concerts, and there is a restaurant called Trucks something. It's a Vietnamese restaurant run by a woman named Truc Nguyen, and she's complaining that the noise is so loud it drives her customers away, and that she and her parents live in a house nearby, and that it's impossible for them to live because of the noise from the foundry. So the foundry is up for renewal for its special permit to hold these outdoor concerts. And they've had now the fourth or fifth planning board meeting where...
it's been the fourth,
yes. Yeah. Oh, it's the fourth, right.
And
heading to the fifth.
Yeah.
And they can't make... The town can't make a decision. There are all kinds of people shouting at each other. Our reporter, Shaw Israel Isaacson, has attended all the meetings, and and he's kind of amazed at the discord. So now they've had another meeting, and they still haven't made a decision about. The woman who owns the foundry is getting concerned because she has to, her liquor license has to be renewed by December 5th. Which is in 5 days, and she can't renew her liquor license if her place is closed, as it is for the moment, although the town seemed to indicate that they would extend the deadline for the liquor license. But anyway, it's a mess, and the town has really taken sides one way or the other, and we're getting endless letters to the editor about what should be done or shouldn't be done with the foundry, and because the foundry is bringing people into downtown, that's good for the local businesses, so it's not so cut and dry.
Well, the whole thing here is this is where government is a great thing, but there's times where it fails. I mean, this is where a government of a town should be able to step in, mediate, come to some sort of agreement, and move on. I mean, I know there's other important issues that go on, but having the common good for the town and for the people that run businesses in the town is a major part. And, you know, to me, there's got to be some way you can sit down with the members of the different agencies in the government and work out something to fix the situation.
Right.
Because you're right. It will only get more and more out of hand. It'll only get more and more divisive at the longer it goes
and
it's
on. Sad. It's sad to watch because these neighbors who are fighting with each other.
They're neighbors and they're entrepreneurs. Yeah, they're both good for the village. I mean,
yeah,
they are. They are exactly right.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, we know. Maybe it's the fact that I reached 70 and I'm now really a crabby old man, and things like this I just don't understand.
Well, you can understand it. I mean, people are lining up on each side, you know. So you wonder why they can't just have a conversation and figure something out.
Yeah. Something, yes.
I think there have been conversations. It's just that the conversations are not satisfying to one or the other.
Well, everybody's got to give up a little of something. That's
right.
The only way you're going to get an answer to it.
Right.
You know, and it's, you know, the tribalism in this country is just out of control.
Yes,
everybody picks a tribe,
yes.
And that's it. There's no going back.
And there is a certain amount of tribalism here.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a new situation, though. I think I think this occurs periodically in towns and communities.
Yeah, but the atmosphere over the past 8 years with social media and one with the other president everybody now thinks that everything like this is okay. You can see it with all the different social media cuts that are on there. It's gotten so bad.
People don't talk to each other now.
They talk at one another. You're right.
Right. And there's no sense of community anymore. It's my side versus your side.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Nobody has a sense that there's something larger.
For gosh sakes, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan could moderate and get together.
Right.
If those two could get together, anybody can get together. That's
Well, that's true. You couldn't imagine two more opposite people.
No, and half the people, unfortunately for us, half the people out there are saying Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan.
Who's that? Right.
All right. Let's move on to a story about that your feature writer has been creating.
Sheila Clary.
Yeah.
She's been writing a series of stories called Where We Are. And what she's doing is profiling local people and enterprises. They're trying to get at what is the essential character of this area.
Right.
And so she's been interviewing people the ordinary people that you take for granted here that make up the crucial, essential parts of the community. And so this week she's profiling Craig and a couple, Craig and Gail Elliott, who were former owners of the Egremont store in Egremont.
Right.
And as people know, when the villages around the Berkshires and in Northwest Connecticut, too, the local store is really a meeting place and an essential part of the community. It's where people come to have coffee or get the newspaper or just sort of touch base with each other. So she's profiling one of the owners of the old Egremont store in Egremont.
Yes, and
it's very interesting.
Right, and talking about sort of what life was like in the 70s, you know, when
they first bought it.
Right, when they bought it.
Husband bought it.
Right, and pictures of them today.
Yeah.
So,
You know, it's interesting. We operate the thrift shop, 501c3 Bargain Barn, and when it was going to go out of business years and years ago, and my mother had run it at one time, so we stepped forward and took it over. And one of the first things we realized, yes, it supplies well needed inexpensive clothing and stuff for families, but people would come there, and they would visit one another for about a half hour, 45 minutes.
Right.
It became exactly what you're talking about. It's a meeting place. And that's what businesses strive for.
Right.
Well, I've lived in a number of towns, and I was living in a town in Vermont, and they met every morning, and there was a group of people that met every morning at the local coffee shop. But it was actually just a counter in the local general store, and they called themselves the Knights of the Round Table. and people would come and visit them and bring them news about what the community was up to, and they would sit there every morning and kind of mull over what was going on in the town.
Mm.
And it was so interesting to see these to listen in on this discussion of what was really going on in the town.
Right. Now, you know what the husband in this couple says is, you know, one of the reasons that they sold the store is really because of the change in the environment, that they knew everybody. Everybody would come into the store, and then, you know, at a certain point, the town started to change. It became, you know, predominantly second homeowners, and they said, you know, people didn't know each other. He would drive on a winter night. He would drive home from the store, and then none of the houses had lights on. And he said, I don't blame people. You know, if they want to sell a house that they paid $30,000 for, and somebody comes along and is willing to pay $350,000 or $400,000 for it, you can't blame them for wanting to sell. But on the other hand, he said the town was just, you know, the whole point of owning the store was different. And he decided that he'd had it, and they sold it. Now, I think that Egremont store, though, continues to be a place where people meet. I mean, somebody, you know, it's still operating. It's just not these same people. But I know, you know, people have reported to me gossip that they heard at the Egremont store. People go in for sandwiches, they go in for the newspaper. It's still a hub. We don't really have any place like that in Great Barrington.
Well, we have Fuel.
We have Fuel, the coffee shop.
Yeah,
right,
we have a coffee shop here, and
right.
And there are people that are regular denizens of that.
Yes, right.
who do mull over the events of the day.
Right, yes. And
with very strong opinions about how the select board is doing.
It's true.
Well, you know, we're talking about profiles, and you've got another story coming up next, and that is a profile of volunteers in medicine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, what a wonderful group that is.
This is part of our business. You know, we are doing business articles on Mondays, which we call Business Monday. And we're trying to do profiles of businesses every week, some for-profit, some non-profit, because non-profits, as you well know, Marshall, trying to keep this radio station alive, I mean, you know, non-profits are also businesses. So this time we did a profile on our, you know, business series of Volunteers in Medicine Incorporated. It's really a wonderful story.
Go ahead, Marcy.
It started.
Volunteers in Medicine is a wonderful institution.
It's a wonderful organization,
yeah.
and it kept going through the pandemic. It kept going strong through the pandemic. But it really started by.
By the way, the word volunteers is. These are volunteers are doctors.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're talking about some real professionals here.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the story goes that back in 2003, there were, two couples that moved up to the Berkshires. One couple consisted of two physicians, two recently retired physicians, and they were talking about the fact that they couldn't find a doctor for themselves. And then they started to think, well, if it's so hard for us to find a doctor, what about people who don't have insurance? So this was back in 2003, and they began to look into it, and they created a sort of 10-page list of people and organizations that ultimately developed into the first iteration of VIM. And they hired a graduate student from the Harvard School of Public Health to conduct a needs assessment, and they discovered that back then there were more than 10,000 uninsured people in the region. So people who not only had no regular physician, but also had no way to go to the ER in a medical emergency or get dental care or obtain a prescription because they couldn't afford it and they didn't have any insurance. So they found, some other recently retired doctors, and they started up around 2003, and it's been going strong. It's not only retired doctors and dentists, it's also doctors and dentists who are practicing in the Berkshires, but who devote a day a week to VIM, and they have been serving, undocumented, quote-unquote, aliens. In fact, there was a rumor during the pandemic and during the Trump administration that people were afraid to go because ICE was sitting in the parking lot waiting to see who showed up and would nab people as they were coming for their doctor's appointments. I don't know if that was true or not, but it was certainly the rumor, and it reflects who was being served. This is not only for immigrants. I went to one of their fundraisers a few years ago, and, there were testimonies by people who had lived here for a long time, who had lost their jobs and therefore lost their insurance and couldn't afford to pay for insurance, and VIM saved their lives. So
it's an amazing organization.
It's an amazing organization, yeah. Well worth supporting.
I want to go on to Carol Owen's next story, because I think this is an interesting story that she decided to do, and that is the origins of welfare in the Berkshires.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, Carol's one of our regular columnists every week, and she really has a wealth of stories about things that have about the history of the Berkshires and how they're the current iterations of what that history has created, and so her column this week is about welfare.
Part one.
Part one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is part one.
There'll be more.
And it really is gets at one of the crucial issues that we as an American culture have to deal with, which is the poor, and how to help them live, and so she revisits our old New England tradition or
colonial period
of addressing the, as she says, the plight of the poor. It was the first law was passed in 1692. So we've had this
law, rather than creating a safety net,
said get out.
The law referred to a practice that was known as warning out, which is if you couldn't pay your way, you were asked to leave the town. You were warned out of the town. A woman whose husband died and left her with children, and she couldn't afford to, to feed the children or support the children, would be kicked out of the community because no one wanted to pay for anybody else. And, and it was So it's, you know, it's the origins of, you know, as she's saying, you know, the tension between those who believe the poor should pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and those who believe the country should lend a hand. And it's, you know, it's still being argued and it's never resolved, and it is the one big difference between political parties. But it started in the colonial period, and it's, you know, and she
cites historical examples, right. One was an example of a woman who who was widowed and left with 7 children. and so how did she make her way for her family?
The other several examples are women who are accused of fornication. Men are never accused of fornication, but the women... Because these women would bring children into the world whom they couldn't afford to support. So the community would kick them out. That if you couldn't pay your share, they didn't want you in the community. Now, there were reasons for this. You know, it's because the community, these communities that were developing, you know, had big expenses. I mean, they had to build roads, they had to build... You know, they had to, well, roads are the big thing, but they had to build infrastructure into their communities, and if you couldn't afford to pay your taxes or contribute to the community projects, the community couldn't sustain you. But still, she finishes the article by saying that, you know, there's a story about this slave called Mumbet, who was the first slave who really ended slavery in Massachusetts, because she had a lawyer who sued on her behalf, and she won her freedom in 1781. But 6 years later, one of these women who was accused of fornication was actually bought by a man. I mean, she was a white woman. She couldn't pay her bills, so somebody actually bought her, paid her bills, and owned her. And even though Mumbet was freed in 1781, 6 years later, when this woman was bought, no one remarked about it or said anything.
Amazing.
They didn't see the irony.
They didn't see the fact that now they had white women who were being enslaved. I mean, what would happen is that if they had bills, somebody would pay their bills and own them until the owner decided that the bill had been paid off. Mm-hmm. But so it was up to the owner to decide when the bill was paid off, and perhaps never.
Interesting look back in history. Well, we got about a minute and a half left, and like we here, I know you there, we are flooded this year because we're past the COVID syndrome, I think, with people worrying, with events, and you've got them all there on your pages.
Yes, well, we have, you know, a couple of things. First of all, we have a fabulous online calendar where you can search for events by date and category and town. But we also are now running on our homepage a column called Holiday Happenings, which we continue to update. And we also have a daily column called Bits and Bytes, where we talk about things that are happening. So the Edge is a good place to find out what's going on.
And you can buy tickets if there's tickets. If they're ticketed
right
events, you can
go right to the box office.
Go right to the box office of these organizations and events.
Now, I have one question about Bits and Bytes. Mm. Seeing as you're on computer, is byte spelled B-I-T-E-S or B-Y-T?
B-Y.
All right, good.
We're very modern.
All right, well, we're out of time, modern people.
Okay.
Well, it's been great talking with you.
That's right, and we'll do it again next week.
Unless there's hardly wait. Okay. All right, we'll have lots of updates on some of these stories, like the foundry, probably.
All right, guys, have a great week.
You too.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That is this week's edition of The Berkshire Edge on Air. Of course, you can find them at theberkshireedge.com.